Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone. This is Lori Siebert, host of Your Financial Choices, and we are still in our 2019 fall membership drive, and we'd like to thank Lynn from Allentown. Lynn, thank you so much for your pledge. For those folks who are current members, you are always welcome to do an additional gift. We would appreciate that. And if you are listening for the first time or maybe a listener but have not become a member, why not do that now? You can call 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Or go online at wdiy.org and click the button for donate now. We rely on our members here at WDIY. This is a strong volunteer organization, but we need to still keep the lights on and the equipment running and have our staff here. So we really rely on members and their contributions, and we really appreciate it as well. There's lots of good news, lots of good programming, and we rely on our members. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And with your membership of $100 or more, we will also help support Second Harvest Food Bank with a match from Valley National Financial Advisors, who is going to help make that match donation to Second Harvest Food Bank so that all of your member contributions can stay right here at WDIY. So do a triple benefit, one for yourself, one for Second Harvest Food Bank, and one for WDIY. Again, 610-758-8810 or online at wdiy.org. Welcome to Your Financial Choices. My name is Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, a CFP, and an AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is October 23rd, 2019. The markets were up with the Dow closing at 26,834, the NASDAQ at 8,120, and the S&P at 3,004. Our topic tonight is the third quarter market review. And we hope to also add some investment education. And while we are live this evening, we are not taking calls because of our pledge drive, because we know you're going to be busy calling that number to make your pledge. Again, 610-758-8810. But you can email questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and we will do our best to get back to you on those. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can ask questions again through the website, Your Financial Choices. We have two guests this evening. We have Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. Tim is a CFP professional, financial advisor, and vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. Tim assists clients with comprehensive financial planning, including retirement plans, investment management, risk management, and tax planning and preparation. He believes that working with individuals and families on long-term planning and navigating financial options requires a relationship based on mutual respect and understanding. He also serves as a member of the Valley National Financial Advisors Investment Committee, providing experienced in-depth financial analysis to determine appropriate investment opportunities for clients. Connor Darrell is an assistant vice president and head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. Connor leads the firm's investment committee and research efforts. It is Connor's job to provide investment analysis and assist the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation. In this role, he meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. Connor is also a certified financial analyst charter holder?
Chartered.
Charter.
Chartered financial analyst.
Chartered. Yeah. Chartered. Sorry. I know it's chartered, and I got confused by the...
They all start with C, so...
Yes, yes. Well, you guys have been on the show before, so welcome back. Thank you for coming back. We're going to try to make this a regular thing where you come and give us your insights on the market. So thank you for being here, both Connor and Tim. So tonight, with that investment recap, of course, there continues to be the... this air of uncertainty that plagues the markets. People still ask, what do we think is going on? So can you give us a quick summary of what went on last quarter?
So I'll provide a quick backdrop, and then, Tim, if there's anything that I missed, feel free to jump in. But market returns in the third quarter were kind of a mixed bag. U.S. large cap stocks and bonds were up, but small caps and international stocks were down. Interestingly, the S&P 500 ended the quarter up over 20% year-to-date, which is really an impressive number no matter what year it is. But when you factor in the reality that, you know, we're starting to see some erosion of sentiment in markets and some concerns and a lot of people throwing around the R word, recession, it makes those gains even more impressive. So it's probably a great time to start rebalancing portfolios and take advantage of the gains that we've experienced so far this year. But most of those gains really took place during the beginning part of the year after stocks rebounded from that big drop we had back in 2018. And things have been kind of flat and choppy since. From an economic perspective, there continues to be a lot of uncertainty over where things might go from here. We kind of mentioned that just a second ago. But on a high level, the global economies started to crack under the weight of trade wars and Brexit and weakening manufacturing activity that kind of all tie into one another. But the United States continues to look a little bit healthier than the rest of the world on a relative basis.
From an economic standpoint, I mean, with the third quarter, there just seems to be some uncertainty out there remaining with trade policies, as Connor mentioned, Brexit deal or looming deal. So right now, I think the markets are really just waiting on a catalyst to move forward or move higher as we sit just off of all-time highs again in the U.S. stock market.
So it still seems like we're seeing a little bit of volatility, like day to day. So overall, though, Connor, you said I think at the beginning of the year was where we saw more of the gains.
Right.
So is it that we're just seeing it kind of those gains are a little bit slower, or are we seeing dips that aren't coming back as fast?
I would describe it as range bound. Would that be kind of how you would describe it, Tim?
That's fair enough.
Up and down for the past several months. And it's really, and we've talked about this the last few times we've been on the show, and we'll probably talk about it next time. And the biggest source of uncertainty for investors so far this year has definitely just been the U.S.-China trade relationship. And from our perspective, that's just something that all investors, all of us, are going to have to continue dealing with until there's a resolution. We still think that there probably will be a resolution. It's in everyone's best interest. It's in the interest of the global economy that something get done. Everyone, both sides want to make sure that they get the best deal they can. So it's going to take a while, and the market's going to react to news. And unfortunately, it's just the reality of the world we're in right now.
Do you think those trade disputes are, you said, it could impact the global market if they have some resolution to that, but this uncertainty, is that affecting the global markets overall, or do you see some economies that might not be impacted by what China and the U.S. are doing?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, the one of the biggest impacts has been in the manufacturing sector. The world has become so much more globalized over the past couple decades, and businesses have international issues to deal with, and they deal with global customers, and that just creates more uncertainty for them when they're pursuing new projects and things. So we've seen manufacturing activity really kind of pull back a little bit. But some of that could also be, at least in the United States, this was kind of something that many people kind of saw coming. It was a part of President Trump's rhetoric in his campaign that he was going to kind of go after other countries and China in particular for practices that he deemed unfair. They might have been, a lot of companies might have been ramping up production prior to this in kind of preparation for it.
Okay. All right, folks, we are at our first break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Tim Roof and Connor Darrell of Valley National Financial Advisors, looking at the third quarter commentary. So we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to WDIY. We are currently in our fall membership drive and relying on members like you or listeners like you who may not have become members yet. How about joining our team? It's a great group of people, a great organization that helps our community with great programming, whether it's news or music or information programs such as Your Financial Choices. And we appreciate new members, especially Lori from Fogelsville. Lori to a Lori, thank you for calling in and becoming a member. She mentioned that she uses the morning information on WDIY in her classes. So that is great to hear. We do have NPR programming on the morning and the afternoon, so that's wonderful news. And some of the information that we bring from WDIY kind of touches us all in very different ways, whether it's you're listening to folk music or the All Things Considered. It brings a number of different opportunities for people to be informed. So thank you so much. If you would like to become a member or you would like to give us an additional gift, you can call 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Operators are on standby to take your call. Or you can go online at wdiy.org, wdiy.org, with your new membership or an additional gift or a renewing membership. We really, really appreciate it. So thank you so much for those folks who are acting. We are going to continue talking with Tim Roof and Connor Darrell right here on Your Financial Choices. And we are talking about the third quarter commentary. And let's talk about the U.S. economy. So how has the U.S. economy managed to stay healthier than much of the rest of the world, despite being right in the thick of that trade war?
So the U.S. consumer has really been the foundation for the economy being, the U.S. economy being where it is today. Right now, the consumer makes up about two-thirds of economic spending here in the U.S., and the consumer, from a household debt service ratio or household net worth standpoint, is in pretty good shape when you look back historically. Right now, you know, debt service ratio, meaning the debt payments that folks have to their overall income, is on relatively reasonable basis when you look at historical data. And that has a lot to do with the fact that interest rates remain very, very low here in the U.S., and not just the U.S., but globally. And overall, with this uncertainty surrounding trade, it has required many global central banks to continue to provide monetary stimulus, continue to reduce rates. We've seen the Fed do that now a couple of times. They're expected to do that even more into the future and possibly even start a new bond purchase program. So those types of things tend to help the overall consumer, keeping those debt payments low, interest payments low, and reasonable long term. Additionally, with the consumer, we're looking at a point in time now where data suggests that wage growth is close to 3.5%. And we have very low inflation of right around 1.5%. So when you have this this low inflationary environment with wages growing at a faster pace than inflation, you know, that's normally a pretty good outcome for the economy, and that's one of the many reasons why the economy has been so resilient so far, you know, this year and at this point of the economic cycle.
So again, back to when we talked about the trade war, and yet we still have seen these kinds of returns in the market that we've seen based on what you said, Tim, because so much of our economy, the U.S. economy, is driven by consumers maybe a little less reliant on manufacturing, that could be why we're not feeling it as much.
Exactly. We don't have to rely as heavily on manufacturing, industrial production, exports, as many other countries do, and even commodities, as other countries do as well.
Okay. And Connor, for manufacturing in the United States, for even though it's not as big of a part of our GDP as it used to be maybe in the past, what are we still looking at manufacturing domestically?
Yeah, we have seen some contraction in manufacturing activity. They use an index called the Purchasing Managers Index, and that has fallen into what they call contraction territory, meaning that manufacturing productivity is now decreasing. But, you know, as we mentioned kind of before the break, it's well within the realm of possibility and reason that a lot of companies were expecting a lot of uncertainty regarding trade and global trade patterns, and may have really ramped up their productivity prior to all of these trade negotiations taking place, and stocked up on inventories and things like that. So, it's not necessarily we have to take the data with a grain of salt and be scrutinizing it, and really kind of try to be thinking about what might have been going on a big picture.
Okay.
Right, and a lot of companies in 2018 were benefiting from tax reform, too. The corporate tax rates reduced from 35% to 21%, and that was particularly a good year for earnings growth, meaning companies had capital on their balance sheet to be able to build their inventories and drive the manufacturing at that time. So I think it's a very hard comparison when you look a year ago or 2 years ago to where we are now at this point in time. So, again, manufacturing is not a good indicator, or a slowdown in manufacturing is not a good indicator that a recession is coming. It's just one of many things that you need to consider when you're looking at the overall economic health and fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the other thing that the U.S. economy has going for it relative to the rest of the world is that the United States still has relatively or a little bit of ammo left in its recession-fighting war chest, and that their interest rates are not zero, where Europe has pushed interest rates back down to zero. Japan's been there for a long time. And so there's still a little bit more room to kind of stave off an economic slowdown here in the United States. We could kind of get into what's going on globally with negative rates and things, that's a kind of a complicated topic. But there certainly is some additional room for the Federal Reserve to kind of battle an economic slowdown.
I guess what you could say if people hear about negative rates, in other countries, what that's saying is that people are more interested in putting money in the U.S. than if we're not in a negative interest rate environment. So that's kind of a general comment without having to go into the complexities of what it means to have a negative interest rate. Because most of us would say, what? How does that exist?
Yeah, you're essentially paying someone for the privilege of lending them money, which makes no sense. So it's a very wild scenario right now. There's a lot of professional investors that are really having a hard time wrapping their head around it.
Okay. And I know that one of our goals this evening was to talk about some investment education as well. So I think some of what we've been talking about at the beginning here, we wanted to give some market commentary, but what's very interesting to me is a number of things that you said tonight, why we need to pay attention to the economy and the markets and what's happening is because that informs us on our investment decisions later. We have talked about interest rates. We have talked about the consumer. We have talked about manufacturing. And if we kind of understand and that's not everything, foreign, we've talked about global impact. So as we've been talking about those, why I want to point this out is a little bit later in the show, soon, hopefully, we're going to talk about some education around investments and why paying attention to some of this will impact or provide value when we're talking about our own portfolios and being diversified and understanding what it means to be diversified and asset classes and all of that. So this is a good lead up to that. And I think it's really important to at least have some understanding of the economy and the markets and how they play together. Folks, we are at our second break. We want you to Please stay tuned for more information, especially as we get into some investment education as we move through the show. We've been talking with Tim Roof and Connor Darrell of Valley National Financial Advisors with a third quarter market commentary. We hope this information is valuable to you and informative, and we're going to talk to you about what that means to you as our fall membership drive continues. The phone number to call to make a pledge is 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to WDIY and our fall membership drive, our 2019 fall membership drive. We are looking for new members, continuing members, sustaining members, and members who are committed to the programming that we have here and the station and would like to do an additional gift. All are welcome. To do so, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, or you can donate very easily online through the website wdiy.org. With pledges of $100 or more, Second Harvest Food Bank will receive a matching gift from Valley National Financial Advisors. Not quite a matching gift. They'll receive meals for each membership of $100 or more to help feed the needy folks in our community through Second Harvest Food Bank, through the partnership that WDIY has with Second Harvest Food Bank. So it's just a wonderful thing that you can contribute and help support the station, but also help contribute and support our families and children in need in our community and to help with meals. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we hope that you appreciate the programming that we do here on WDIY. This show that I've hosted for 10 years now, Your Financial Choices, hopefully brings valuable information to our listeners and to our community to help you make better and more informed financial decisions in your own life that make a difference to you. And for that value, a membership is a great way to show your sign of support. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. Welcome back to the show, you guys, listeners, and Tim Roof and Connor Darrell right here in the studio. We're talking about the third quarter market commentary, learning a little bit about what's happening and what we're watching and experiencing and seeing. Let's kind of wrap up a little bit of our market commentary, you guys, so that we can kind of move on to some education, because I think that is what would be really valuable for our listeners, understanding the impact of what we've been talking about so far. So we have talked a little bit about trade. We've talked a little bit about interest rates, the consumer, manufacturing. What else? Inflation. What do we want to say about inflation? Does that have some impact on
So inflation often kind of manifests itself towards the end of the economic cycle, and a lot of that kind of stems from, as Tim was talking about earlier, you know, when the labor market starts to get tight, meaning there's less people looking for jobs than there are jobs available, then you employers have to start offering higher wages, and you see wage growth, and then you see everything starting to get more expensive, and that kind of funnels its way through the economy, but generally, and this has been a trend for decades now, we haven't really seen much inflation, and you know, there's probably a number of reasons for that, one of which being kind of technology. And I think that's probably been a major driving force for the lack of inflation in the global economy recently. And it kind of has the twofolded effect of driving down the cost of producing goods. It makes everything more efficient, and you don't have to invest as much into building something. And it also makes customers more educated because they have the ability to go online and you know, find information about what they're trying to buy. I mean, a great example, I just recently purchased a car, and you know, the amount of information available on the auto market and any market really is makes it so much more empowering to a consumer going in and trying to determine what, you know, what might be the best deal for them. It really helps keep prices in check.
And from an inflationary standpoint, commodities have always been a major driver as well of inflation in the past. I could think back to the 2000s where a barrel of oil was well over $100 per barrel. And now we're trading in the 50s and 60s for a barrel of oil. And that has a lot to do, though, going back to technology again, because the U.S. is now a net exporter of commodities due to...
Could you explain commodities for people who might not know what commodities means?
Sure, certainly. And the commodities I'm predominantly referring to is oil and gas, you know, the things that we need to heat and energize our homes and our vehicles to get from point A to point B that we spend, you know, a good chunk of our income on a monthly and annual basis. And that you know, is a real driver of our spending power. When you see inflation go up, and wages aren't keeping up, that presents a problem with our spending power. And that's when you start to see, you know, issues with the overall economy at that point of time. But going back to the comment on technology, mm-hmm. is that, you know, with the U.S. now becoming a net exporter of oil and gas, it's significantly brought down the price of commodities, which has helped keep inflation in check. Mm. And even when we've had disruptions globally from other areas and their production, the U.S. has just been able to come to the market with more oil or gas to meet that need. So overall, I think that's another important item that is, you know, yes, wage growth will drive inflation, but I think on the other end, we might see commodities always, at least at this point, manage inflation or expectations, so to speak.
So interesting. So we also hear the R word, recession. So how does this play into the conversation?
So a lot of times when you're talking about what might push the economy into recession, Tim talked earlier about a catalyst for the markets. A lot of times you kind of need a catalyst to push the economy over the edge, so to speak. And when you look at historically certain things that have driven recessions in the past or have served as that catalyst, you know, things like monetary policy, issues with, to Tim's point, oil. So you think about like the 70s when oil prices skyrocketed, industrial production being poor. That's not really a major part of the economy anymore. The oil prices Tim already talked about aren't a major issue right now. And monetary policy, you know, historically, a lot of times the Federal Reserve and central banks have been blamed for causing the recession because they increased interest rates too quickly or by too much. And we talked about earlier that the Federal Reserve is likely moving in the opposite direction. So it's hard to kind of find what that catalyst might be other than maybe trade. But we still, you know, we talked about how important it is for the global economy and for both parties involved to kind of get something done and established. And it's, as we get closer and closer to the election cycle, it's probably going to be in President Trump's interest as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from the recession, you know, what is a recession? That's when two quarters of gross domestic product contract, one after the other. So once we have two quarters of GDP or gross domestic product contracting, that's when we are technically in a recession. And right now, economic growth is still growing. The second quarter did come in at 2% economic growth. So from that perspective, just wanted to kind of give you an idea of what we mean when we're talking about a recession and how that could impact you. And just to kind of build off of what Connor was saying about catalysts for a recession, you know, I tend to agree with what he's saying right now. When you look at the items that have caused recessions in the past, such as industrial, oil, inflationary type issues, monetary policy, financial valuations, or fiscal policy, I would say the one that comes top of mind that could be a problem is the fiscal policy, especially if trade policies were to get worse at this juncture.
Okay. Great recap, you guys. Folks, we when we come back from this midway break, we will start talking about a little bit about some investment education, taking some of this information that we talked about tonight, what it might mean to you, what it might mean for proper asset allocation and diversification and types of assets that you might have in your portfolio. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And this is Your Financial Choices here on WDIY. Good afternoon. I should say good evening. Seamus McGrogan here. I'm the development director for WDIY, and I'm just stopping in real quick to update everybody on our fall membership drive. Of course, this is the time of year where we come to you and ask for your support, because it's only through member support that we can keep programs like Your Financial Choices on the air. And Lori, I always say that I learned so much listening to your program.
Thank you.
You bring your expertise here, and you like to instruct everybody in a way. So in a way, you're a teacher.
I'm a frustrated wannabe teacher, for sure.
Is that, you think that's the reason why you like to, you went into the career you did and you came to the station like this?
Well, I fell into the career by accident, but I did learn that it was something that I could use in my life no matter what, whether I was doing it as an occupation or if I used it for my own well-being, because everyone has financial decisions every single day. And I also felt that in my own family, my parents probably didn't have the support that they needed. Not everyone has a financial advisor. So
right.
To the extent that we as a community public radio station can bring some education to our listeners, I'm all about that.
Well, that's a fantastic reason to want to go out and help people and give people financial advice. If you appreciate having a financial advice show here on WDIY, now's the time to support us, because it's only going to hang around with your support. We'd love to have somebody to thank during this program. We have yet to have our icebreaker for the program, and that could be you right now. So if you're listening and you're a regular listener to the program, please call in at 610-758-8810. Or go online to our website, wdiy.org, click the donate button, and help support Your Financial Choices and all of the WDIY programs with your gift. Now, when you do, you're going to be taking advantage of our partnership for the drive. So hanging around just for the fall membership drive is our partner with Lori, your company, Valley National Financial Advisors, who have generously offered to help support Second Harvest Food Bank of the Lehigh Valley. So let me explain how this works. For every $100 that we raise during the membership drive, Valley National is going to contribute funds to Second Harvest. And that's going to be 21 additional meals that Second Harvest is going to provide to the community. So think about your donation, supporting the programs and triggering that extra meal donation that Second Harvest is going to do what they do best. They're going to bring those meals out to the people who need them the most. So two good deeds with one donation, but that partnership is only around for the membership drive. So as soon as it ends, that partnership goes away. If you're hearing us talk about it, it's the best time to give right now. And it signals to Lori that she has a loyal audience that will support WDIY and will keep it here on our airwaves. So I'm going to throw it back to Lori and the crew here. But before I go, let me remind you of that phone number, 610-758-8810. Or going online to WDIY.org.
Thank you very much, Seamus, and thank you, listeners. We hope you call in and indeed show your support for this particular program. I take it very personally. Last week, it was a little quiet as well, and I put up a challenge last week, and we didn't get our calls, but I still made my contribution. And And yes, I am a contributor here as well. Even though I'm coming here and contributing my time, I am also a financial contributor because I believe so much in this programming. So please do so. 610-758-8810. Be the first person during the show. I usually have a lot of loyal listeners who call in, so I'm not sure why it's so quiet. So 610-758-8810 and online at wdiy.org. Welcome back to the show. We have Tim Roof and Connor Darrell here talking about the third quarter market commentary, but I think it's also very, very important to talk about a little bit of investment education. So Tim and Connor, why don't we talk a little bit about asset allocation, because Tim had said something, or Connor, I apologize, which one of you said that we've seen the market up quite a bit. The S&P was up 20% year to date, and this could be an opportunity to do some rebalancing. And let's talk about what rebalancing means, and then let's talk a little bit about that in relation to asset allocation.
So rebalancing is a process where you look at your portfolio on a normally a reoccurring basis. Some folks could look at their portfolio quarterly, semi-annually, annually. But when you do that, you basically, you already have a set asset allocation or your long-term asset allocation that you would normally follow based upon your investment goals and your objectives. Now, what happens is over time, we've talked about it this year, the markets have performed very, very well. Equities are up close to 20%. So equities have probably become likely a larger piece of your overall portfolio. And now you might be taking on a little bit more risk than what you're willing to stomach during times of volatility. So when you look at, when you rebalance on that reoccurring frequency, you're basically selling portions of your portfolio that have performed well and buying other portions of the portfolio that haven't performed as well. Therefore, it's almost an investment discipline where you're selling high on some assets and buying lower on other assets.
And a lot of people resist that, right? Because they don't want to sell when something's doing really well because they think, ooh, let's keep riding this, you know.
Precisely,
rock.
Yeah. And that's the thing is yeah, the emotions will get to you and you'll want to continue to ride the wave, so to speak, but sometimes it comes crashing down before you expect it to come crashing down. And you know it's very hard to time the market, and you know that's something that you have to really do on a daily basis, have some discipline and philosophy around to even try to be successful at something like that. So for most folks, to being a long-term investor, saving for retirement or other savings goals, you know, it's important to just have a disciplined structure like having an asset allocation and rebalancing regularly.
And people really can set that up kind of as a kind of a trigger. So for example, we can do automatic saving in our 401k. That's something we don't have to think about. So if people need some kind of a trigger to do a recurring rebalancing, that trigger could be open enrollment time, which a lot of people are in right now. So if you're in open enrollment, that could be your trigger. Hey, now's the time to go check out my portfolio and do a rebalance. If they don't have the discipline that some folks do, that's a way to kind of set a time so you don't forget to do it.
And check with your plan too, or even human resources, because sometimes when you have your retirement plan through work, it's possible you can set up an automated rebalance frequency for your investments in the plan. So it's always important that, you know, if you don't want to have to do it manually, there may be a procedure where you could set it up to be automated on a regular basis.
Okay. So before we talk about asset allocation, you mentioned risk tolerance and what you can tolerate. What are you looking at, or what do people talk about when they're talking about risk tolerance? How does one decide what their risk tolerance is?
I think one of the best ways to approach it is to try to really be honest with yourself and look at your portfolio and try to honestly answer the question, you know, how much of a drop And I think it's easier sometimes if you think about it in dollar terms more than percentage terms. How much of a drop what's the largest drop you'd be comfortable with over a certain period of time? And based on how large that might be, you can kind of try to figure out, how much risk do I want to take? And usually the way I kind of think about it is I would break up the components of my portfolio into kind of two buckets. One would be kind of risk seeking. Those are the growth assets, things like stocks, high yield bonds, which are more risky than traditional bonds because they are much lower quality companies. And then the other one would be kind of diversifying or risk mitigating assets, things like core bonds, traditional bond allocations, a money market fund or a stable value fund, and some alternative investments might fall into that category as well. But that's kind of the high level way you'd want to think about it.
And time horizon?
Time horizon is always a very important factor when you're talking about your portfolio. Because you can have a different time horizon for certain savings goals, such as purchasing a home, purchasing a new car. Alternatively, your time horizon could be a lot longer when you're talking about retirement and you're in your 20s, 30s, or 40s, and you have a longer runway to save. And you could possibly, deal with a little bit more risk and try to achieve a little bit more growth, allow your money to work for you as you work hard as well. When you have that longer time horizon and you have a little bit more time to recover if something were to, if the markets or the economy were to underperform for a period of time.
Okay. So risk tolerance. If we understand our risk tolerance, we understand we need to rebalance. Asset allocation, you said equities, bonds. You both said that, equities, bonds. So quite often, people generally will have an understanding that they would have some kind of a mix. You'll hear people say, should I be 60-40? And they understand 60-40 means something. And sometimes it's typically people say 60% equities, 40% bonds when they're maybe not yet retired, that kind of thing. So when we talk about asset allocation, though, it's not just equities and bonds. We can do a deeper dive into that. So can you guys talk about what other factors people should pay attention to when we're talking about asset allocation rather than just broadly equities? Because I could go 60% into ABC stock and 40% into XYZ bond. That doesn't mean you have a proper asset allocation.
Right. And one way to kind of dig lower, where you can go a number of layers, but the next layer down from equities would probably be different market caps and regions. So you'd think of things like, do I want to own larger companies versus smaller companies, international companies, meaning companies that are domiciled in other countries, are ways to kind of add diversification to the portfolio. For example, if obviously a small manufacturer in Belgium, for example, is going to have different risks that it's exposed to than a large, tech company in the United States. So that's one way to add another layer of what we call kind of diversification to the portfolio. You also might want to have a mixture of large and small companies. Smaller companies are going to be a little bit riskier, but there's going to be a little bit more growth opportunities there because they might be in an earlier phase of their development.
So they might not pay you dividends, but there could be an opportunity for growth there.
Right.
So right there, you could be kind of diversifying a little bit. In a large company, you might be looking for a dividend. A small company, it might be growth.
Exactly. And then you can even go another layer down and looking at different sectors of the economy. So companies that operate in different sectors. I think a great example that would be rather timely for this period is, owning a mixture of companies in various different sectors. And a lot of times, if you're in your 401k plan or something, you'll be able to purchase fund options in the plan that will have exposure to all of these different things. But if you have, an account where you're picking some stocks, you want to be cognizant of the fact that you don't want to load up all on companies in one industry. Because, for example, if you look at energy companies over the past 2 or 3 years, they have vastly underperformed other sectors like technology and things like that. So you want to make sure that you aren't putting all your eggs in one basket.
And Connor's really speaking to the crux of diversification overall. It helps the diversification when you're talking about diversifying across large cap, mid cap companies, small caps, foreign companies, is that you're smoothing out your returns over time. Because, you know, when you only hold one or two assets, you're going to ride that perpetual kind of roller coaster from time to time. And when you put together, an appropriate asset allocation, you tend to want to put together assets that have some levels of uncorrelation to one another, meaning they don't act like one another at all times, so that if, for example, large caps are underperforming, it's possible small caps could be performing well, or vice versa, because we saw that here in the third quarter. We saw small caps underperform, but large caps did okay. And unfortunately, no one's going to ring the bell to tell you when to get in and out of each of these different capitalizations or sectors. So that's why it's always important to probably try to keep that diversified portfolio at all times.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back from our next break. You've been listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are in our 2019 Fall Membership Drive. If you'd like to become a member or continue your membership, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thanks. And we are back on. Welcome back to WDIY's 2019 Fall Membership Drive. If you would like to become a member, continue being a member with your sustaining membership, or maybe with an additional gift, you can call 610-758-8810 or pledge online at wdiy.org. And we really would like to thank Corey of Easton. Thank you so much. She's a new member and really appreciates our local NPR station right here in the Lehigh Valley. And she listens every day during her commute, and we really appreciate that. So thank you, Corey of Easton. And if you appreciate the programming that we have here on WDIY, whether it's our news programs, our local programs, or our music of all different genres, tune in regularly. You get quite a variety, and you can tune in either at 88.1 or online at wdiy.org. There have been a number of times when I've been on my commute listening to WDIY, and I get very involved in a story, but then I pull into the garage and need to head into the house. And what do? I quickly go to my phone, pull it up on my phone, and I can continue listening as I walk into the house. So lots of opportunities and lots of different ways to listen and or become a member. 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. And podcast of prior shows of especially Your Financial Choices are also available at wdiy.org under local programming, and you just look for Your Financial Choices and lots of options there. So thank you, listeners. We are in our final section of Your Financial Choices, and you can call. You won't miss anything because you can always listen to it online later. Again, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. So Tim and Connor, let's do a little bit more of our investment education. What else do you think is important to share? Should we talk a little bit more about some of these sectors that you mentioned earlier, Connor? All the different sectors that people can be in?
Sure. So we can dig into that a little bit more deeply. There's 11 sectors in the economy. They get broken out by things like financials. So those are banks. You've got utilities, companies that generate energy, and a lot of those are regulated by the government. And then I think one that kind of sometimes is a little bit confusing for people to disentangle is consumer discretionary versus consumer staples. So consumer discretionary are companies that produce goods that are a little bit more sensitive to economic conditions. So think about things that you might cut back on if you We're experiencing some harder times in a harder economy where consumer staples are things that generally people are gonna be a little bit more willing to purchase even in any economic environment. So things like groceries.
Yeah, paper goods. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've also got, you know, healthcare, energy, and the list goes on. Real estate. So there's you want to make sure, like we said earlier, that you're exposed to as many of these as you can get and get a nice balance. It's okay to, if you have, you know, if you feel that there are better opportunities in one sector versus another, to have more of one. But it's generally if that's when you're thinking about building a portfolio from scratch, you want to make sure that diversification is something that you emphasize.
Do people typically think real estate, your home, is filling that piece of your portfolio? Or do you feel like people don't pay attention to their home when they're talking about an asset allocation that might include one of these sectors?
I think that's a good point, Lori. So I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot of times is people might feel that they don't have exposure to real estate in their portfolio. Well, when in reality, if you own your home, that's a massive allocation to real estate. So it's something that you do want to consider. I think there are different types of real estate. So real estate investment trusts that are traded on the stock exchange that you can purchase, they might own property, you know, commercial, they might own shopping centers, they might own hotels, things like that. They might own office space. So there's different ways of getting into different types of real estate. You know, obviously, as we've evolved and going back to the technology theme, you know, that retail and the environment in retail has evolved where a lot more is done online. So it's a little, you know, we're seeing that some of the lower tier shopping centers aren't doing as well because people aren't really necessarily shopping. I mean, I think some of the more upper quality shopping centers and people that want variety in retail or people are still shopping. But you see a lot of, you know, stores that aren't kind of considered top tier that are really struggling stores. You know, that's one space where you want to be a little bit careful with your real estate decisions. But, you know, that's a good point because your home is real estate.
Well, I just wanted to mention, I think some may be wondering, you know, how do I get exposure to these sectors? And this sounds complicated to try to pick all these sectors. And how does this, what does this mean to my employer retirement plan? A lot of times you are already exposed to these sectors because you either own an index fund that the plan provides, such as the S&P 500 index fund that could be provided in the plan, or a large cap fund or a mid cap fund. And those fund managers are normally spreading that investment across dozens of companies, across multiple sectors, possibly all 11 of these sectors. So that's how sometimes you can get that diversification in your asset allocation is by owning those different funds in your employer retirement plans or your own personal investments through the facet of index-based funds or mutual funds.
Do you know if, for example, you mentioned 401k, do you know if there are tools available on, you know, employer websites for the 401k where they could find out what kind of exposure they have? Do they have those tools available?
So it feels like the theme of the night now, technology. Lot of the technology has really grown over the years, and a lot of employer plans have been able to provide more and more information because it's so much more accessible now these days and easy to bring to you. Mm-hmm. It's possible that you could log into your plan and see an idea of, okay, here are my overall exposures, high level equity to bonds, getting a little bit more into the weeds. What are my different capitalizations? Do I own predominantly large sized companies or mid-sized companies, small sized companies? And some may even go further into the weeds and see how it's broken down from a sector allocation based upon the particular investments that they currently hold.
Mm-hmm. So individual holdings, if people may be outside of the employer plan, because typically we don't see, you know, individual equities in employer plans, so they may have that diversification there. They may have it already there. Some folks who have the privilege of having enough money to invest outside of retirement plans may be dipping the toe in doing individual equities. They too then would have to be more diligent about watching that sector exposure. So if they don't have an advisor who's helping them do that, they may have, again, technology maybe on some of these platforms like, you know, Yahoo or Google, you know, these finance applications where they could put their positions in and look for a reallocation or...
Yeah, it's likely going to take a lot more oversight on someone's part to really build out a portfolio based upon sector investing and continue to monitor that as you move forward versus using alternative options like index-based funds or mutual funds where you're trusting that the portfolio manager will make good decisions for you over the long term.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about rebalancing and how sometimes we're taking the gains and taking the proceeds from those positions that had grown so much and putting it in maybe some pieces or positions that aren't doing so well. With taking gains, sometimes we have tax consequences. So typically, if it's within your retirement plan, you don't have a tax consequence because you don't have tax consequences until you take the money out of the plan. So when we're taught, it's very easy then to reallocate in a retirement account. Outside of the retirement account, you may want to factor in tax consequences. But occasionally, we'll also hear people talk about harvesting losses. And we're probably going to talk more about that as the end of the year comes and we're doing tax planning. So, Tim, could you talk for a second about what it means to harvest losses? And that sounds like it goes against what you said in reallocating and, you know, taking gains.
Yeah. So when you have a properly diversified portfolio, not all assets in your portfolio are likely going to go up because you don't always want your assets to go up at the same time, because at some point one piece of the portfolio may be performing well now but perform poorly later when the other piece of the portfolio could then hold that up at other times. So when you have that in your portfolio and you have a taxable account where you might have some losses, you could decide if you want to sell that particular position to realize the loss. And you can use up to $3,000 of losses per year versus your ordinary income to help reduce your overall income taxes for the year. So you could still get something out of the underperformers in your portfolio from a tax basis. One important item to note, though, is if you do harvest that loss, but you still like that position and want to stay in it, you want to avoid buying it back within the next 30 days, because then that triggers a wash sale and you will not be able to take that loss on your income tax return. So you have to wait at least 31 days in order to buy that position back.
Okay. So just because you harvested that loss doesn't mean it was a bad position. You still could like it. Just you want to harvest the loss to help you for tax purposes. 31 days later, you buy it back. Or you could buy something, if it was like a mutual fund or an ETF, you could buy something similar. You just can't buy the exact same thing. And so you want to avoid.
That's a good point.
Okay. All right. We have just about a minute and a half left. Is there anything you guys would like to add to our discussion tonight, either about the market commentary or some last bit of advice on investment education?
I think we touched on a lot of things, but I think to Tim's point, the overarching theme today has been technology. Technology stocks have been really, really strong over the past 10 years. If everyone's ever heard the term FANG, that refers to, you know, the Facebooks, Apple, Google, Netflix. Amazon, Netflix, those types of companies that have really grown over the course of the past several years. But one thing that I think is interesting, we talked about index funds. Index funds, basically what they do is they take all the companies on the exchange or that are in the index, and they weight them in the portfolio based on how big they are. So over the course of the past several years, those FANG stocks have become an increasingly large piece of the index. And that's been good for investors because those stocks have all done very well. But it's something that I think is worth being aware of when you're looking at index funds and you're thinking about using them, is you want to be aware of what's in the index, mm-hmm. and how much of each stock the index allocates to. So what we've seen over the past several years is that we've started to see some of that concentration in those very large tech stocks that we listed earlier. And that kind of goes back to our idea earlier where we're talking about diversification. It's not like it's totally out of whack and you only own tech if you own the S&P 500, but it's something that has really kind of transitioned over the past several years that I think is worth discussing and investors should be aware of.
Very good. Good education piece.
Just continue to understand your goals, both short-term and long-term. Assess your risk-reward regularly and set up a disciplined approach to continue to reassess that as you move into the future.
Thank you, Tim. Tim Roof from Valley National Financial Advisors and Connor Darrell from Valley National Financial Advisors. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. And we're hoping to wrap up our 2019 fall membership drive, but I do want to mention that next week on Your Financial Choices, we will have attorney Ryan Fields from King Spry to discuss estate planning basics and beyond. And we have coming up next Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week and call in your membership, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org. Have a good night.